Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Welcome. My name is Anne Wilson, and it is my pleasure to host Emerge Australia's podcast series for 2026, brought to you during Long COVID Awareness Week. I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country and their connections to land, sea, and community, and pay my respect to elders past and present, noting their continuing contributions, struggles, and achievements. As we continue to reflect on the magnificent lyrics of John Lennon's Imagine, I can't help to imagine a world where the brotherhood of man, woman, is celebrated globally, and for our listeners, a world without stigma or discrimination, a world where we have equity of access to treatments, clinical services, and cures. Now, that's something not only worth imagining, but actively visualizing and making happen. As in past years, I have the pleasure to interview clinicians, researchers, health professionals, and people with lived experience from all over the world working with or impacted by ME/CFS, long COVID, or an infection-associated chronic illness. Today, we have pleasure to speak with a young long COVID warrior, Henry Barker, who's joined by his mum, Jen. Together, they will share their journey and insights. Henry's story is also featured in the book, along with Drs. Emma Tippett and Michelle Spooler, The Rehabilitation and Management of Long COVID, highlighting the unique challenges faced by children and young people. Henry is an aspiring writer and has a passion for literature and has bravely navigated the complexities of long COVID. His experience sheds light on the importance of tailored approaches for diagnosing and managing this condition in young people. We explore the impact of dysautonomia, including POTS, and the interventions that have brought relief. So join us in this conversation where we discuss the profound impact of stigma and the need for education within the healthcare system. Henry's story is a powerful reminder of the resilience and strength of the human spirit. Welcome, Henry and Jen.
Thank you, Anne.
Yeah, hi.
So, we're going to start with you, Henry. Thank you so much for being willing to share your story. So, as a young person with long COVID, can you tell us what has been the most challenging aspect of your journey so far? And in particular, how it has impacted your daily life and aspirations?
Yeah, definitely. Particularly, it all comes kind of back to the symptoms of being not able to sort of interact in society as I'd like to, or as a normal teenager would. And that separation that the symptoms cause between sort of my personal life and life outside just my house or bedroom. And yeah, that's something that has been challenging to manage. And yeah, something that particularly recently I've been trying to work on. And yeah.
So can I ask, has it increased your sense of isolation from the people that you would normally be hanging out with, going to school with, studying with, etc.?
Yeah, particularly in the early days, definitely. I felt that very much in those when I really didn't really understand what was happening and sort of losing that contact and friendships with my friends. But now it's on a steadier track, I'd say, sort of coming back into the world and making those connections with people.
Probably new people too, so not people that you knew beforehand. So you've got to actually be intentional about making and finding new friends in spaces that are easier for you to, work inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the world the same place as when you had to retreat due to long COVID, or is it a bit different?
I suppose for me personally, not really at all. Yeah. I mean, I got sort of long COVID when I was 13, 14. I can't even remember now. And sort of coming back into it as a 17-year-old, it's very much different, not only in the general sort of age thing that comes with the changes in life that comes with age, but the, stepping back into the world, I guess.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's a brave thing to do, and it can be challenging. Can you tell me whether your long COVID journey has impacted what you want to do with your life?
Yeah, I think I'm not quite sure. I think that's still something I'm working out on. I really wanted to be a teacher when I was sort of that 13, 14-year-old, but now that, I've sort of the difficulties with how school operates and that kind of system, just personally, that is something that I'm not sure is sort of for me, I guess, and that, being a teacher would be kind of just like more school. And yeah, so I'm working through how I want to go about my life, whether I go to uni or take a gap year, and sort of try and recover as much as I can and improve before I sort of progress further.
Sure. Can I also ask you about how accommodating you found the education system of your condition?
Yeah, it depends what school. I think
you started at the beginning.
Yeah, I started at a sort of public high school, and that was quite interesting. I don't think anyone really understood, and neither did I really, but I wouldn't say very at all accommodating there. I was going to school less and less, sort of just periods a day, if even that. And they kind of expected, they made this plan of basically a weekly progress of like an extra period or so a day or a week. And that was just impossible. I think they assumed I'd already reached the bottom, I guess, and that I was just going to make this rapid growth, which was certainly not the case. I spent a long time after that sort of not going to school, and I didn't have much contact at all with that school. Eventually, I went to a school run by an online school,
run
by the department, which I think was a good sort of an okay introduction into online learning. I wasn't very happy there. I wouldn't say I was learning very much or that it was suited to me. It may work for some people, but eventually I ended up at another online school, which has been really, really helpful, where it is just really classes like any other school, but just on Zooms, and there's a lot more contact, which I think is the most sort of important thing, because that can be really encouraging just to do your schoolwork.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds to me, and Sue, I'll also, Jen, sorry, I'll ask you this as well. It sounds as though the challenges that you face are not just within the healthcare system.
No.
they're with the education system, and I suspect also with the way young people regarded when you say you've got an energy-limiting disease like long COVID. I mean, Jen, from a mum's perspective, how do you navigate those challenges?
That's a good question. It's, and I'm sorry, my brain fog's pretty bad today. It was really hard because at that point I had long COVID. And so I was trying to navigate that for myself and then realizing that Henry was presenting with a lot of the same, I was going to say conditions, but the same
symptoms.
Symptoms. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. So that was tricky, but also just devastated to see this poor kid who was trying so hard to stay connected to his school and with his friends, and seeing this, trying to support Henry with that and being frustrated for him, that despite their best intentions, I think Henry described it better than I could, just this concept of presuming he's on a path of recovery, despite letters that were suggesting otherwise from doctors. And at that point, even some of the doctors we were seeing weren't sure what they were dealing with. So it was a really a big state of confusion and frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And for poor Henry, it really didn't help him at all, having this goal that he was expected to be there for one lesson a day on this particular week. And the next week, let's raise that to two lessons a day and see how you go, when he actually wasn't even managing one lesson a day, let alone not having adjusted expectations regarding assignments or whatever that might be. Really, there very little education was there for the teachers to know what he was going through. And I think a lot of people at that particular time, A, they had no idea about ME-CFS, no idea about POTS. I'm not sure whether you were diagnosed with that at that point anyway, but when it came to long COVID, people were still thinking that it was some sort of form of ongoing symptoms from your infection, and people really putting him in this little bucket of one of those strange people that didn't recover. So it was all very messy and difficult, and Henry did so well navigating that space and persevering. And I think, interestingly, the way that he coped through that time was listening to audiobooks. And so despite his headaches, I think that's the way that he managed to escape a little bit into an alternate world. And I think he's even wrote in that piece that he did for Dr. Scowler, where his dreams at that point were still without long COVID. So he was able to be there. I should say Henry's the third of four kids. So that has definitely helped him in terms of having, for 99.9% of the time, really good, solid interactions with other people around him in the house. But also there's a level of grief that comes with that, because you see them getting on with their life and he's not. So there's definitely some issues around that, but certainly the house is never quiet, which is mostly a good thing.
The busy family, it really is. And I'm actually glad to hear you mention that level of grief, because it's often not, it goes unnoticed.
Yeah.
And often what you notice is someone's feeling very low, or feeling, you know, very teary, or getting very angry. And that's all associated with the loss that you're experiencing of the kind of life that you would have wanted to have, especially that you see around you, and what your actual experience is. So the recognition that that is grief is actually a really, really important part of starting to heal as well.
Certainly you've had a lot of frustration, haven't you, when people just haven't understood that, yes, of course I'd love to go to the beach today, but I actually can't. People just not understanding why, when you've been in bed all week, why couldn't you get to the beach?
Yeah.
Or why couldn't you go to the shops or whatever it might be?
Of course, it's an invisible illness, isn't it? So people look at you and think that there's nothing wrong.
Yeah, well, that's right. They might just see sort of a tired person, I suppose. But yeah, they're just generally, people assume that I'm just a regular teenager with regular capabilities.
Yeah, that must be pretty challenging for you. Did you feel very misunderstood by some people?
Yeah, quite often. And it's hard to explain, I guess, and it depends with the different people. I certainly have to explain. I've gotten quite used to explaining what it's like or my symptoms and my story and things like that. But even that, it still doesn't always cut it. Yeah, that has been quite a challenge.
Yeah. So you're mentioned in the book, the rehabilitation book, that along with Dr. Emma Tippett and Michelle Schooler, and you've got a passion for literature and writing. Tell us a little bit more about that and how long COVID has influenced some of your creative pursuits.
Yeah, definitely. I've always had a love of books, I suppose, and stories, but particularly since getting long COVID and being confined to my bed and not having any sort of sensory effect, I guess, on me. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but trying to sort of chase stories and make up stories in my head and trying to find them has been really sort of something I relied on, particularly in the quite sort of tough times. And yeah, that's something I've really resorted to, I guess. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Have your creative pursuits presented any unique opportunities for you other than the inclusion in the rehabilitation book, or have they posed challenges for you along the way in your journey?
Yeah, it's hard to say, I think. I'm quite optimistic about that sort of side of me, I suppose. I've seen, you know, some authors talk, like Tim Winton and Trent Dalton, Stan Grant, and I've met a few of them, and that's been really great and encouraging.
Fabulous. And
yeah, it's just like a real sort of, it's really uplifting, I guess, to hear from them personally and to sort of take up your own initiative and going sort of, yeah, I could do this. This is what I'm passionate about. And I can write what I want to write and how I really feel.
You're doing that for your, Henry's doing Extension English 2, is that
yeah.
Right? So the equivalent of the old school 4-unit English. And he's making the most of the opportunity of the main assessment task of that is piece of creative writing is what Henry's heading down. And so he's actually picked up a secondhand typewriter because the idea of actually just slowly typing really appealed to him to be able to concentrate on what he was typing. That was an idea that he's pinched from Trent Dalton.
Yep.
And yeah, I'm really looking forward to what he manages to come up with. The ideas that he's been bouncing around sound really good, but I love that he's going to be telling his story of long COVID in this piece of creative writing. So yeah, it's good.
Well, that sounds amazing. That's I love to read it. So it's fabulous. So Jen, I want to turn a little bit now to the healthcare system. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the whole issue of Henry's diagnosis, how the healthcare system has managed his long COVID, and what are the barriers and some of the misconceptions that you've faced that you believe actually need to be addressed?
It's been beyond frustrating, to be perfectly clear, from the get-go. I think it's been quite interesting that he was of the age he was and I was an adult. So I had a lot more interest in me because I was able to participate in trials. And so a lot of the doorways that opened for me happened because of that. I was also particularly fortunate to meet some other women of a similar age and stage in life on the Australian Long COVID Facebook group. And the five of us have become really good friends and we share a lot of information. And if it wasn't for them, I actually think that we would be stuck. But for Henry, it's been particularly at the beginning, we had a very kind GP who tried his best, but really didn't have the resources at his fingertips. And we were talking about it this morning and how frustrating and hard it was to sit in a waiting room that was noisy and bright. And that was sort of the beginning of the journey. And then it was a matter of really just having to knock really hard on doors to get Henry seen by anyone. And we've been really grateful for doctors who have listened to Henry, have really seen that this is a multifaceted condition and that there is an impact on your own mental health too, and needing to talk that through. Whereas we have experienced the other extreme of that, where people just haven't understood. And I guess one of the silver linings of our story is that I've understood every single thing Henry has said. So when he talks about whatever pain it is, I've understood what that feels like or what that situation's like. So we've been able to be each other's best advocates, I think, in that space. But we did find it hard, particularly to find someone in Sydney who understood POTS. And so we went to Adelaide on two occasions to go down there to see a cardiologist who works in this space and had a nursing team working alongside and an exercise physiologist. And we were fortunate that we had family in Adelaide who were able to care for us during both of those trips to make that possible. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been. And then back in Sydney, Henry did go to one of the local public hospitals that was supposedly POTS, chronic fatigue, long COVID aware for teenagers, but he was popped on an exercise bike and a treadmill, and the fear in Henry's eyes was just awful. And when we returned, they insisted on doing it again. And we decided after that visit that we would never return, because the impact that had on him, there was just nothing good coming out of it.
What was the impact?
Well, I think especially with that being forced to sort of, well, not forced, but doing those tests were really challenging. Specifically, I remember going on the treadmill and having this sort of mask on my face, the giant sort of tube curling back connected to some sort of machine. And I really had to sort of pretend that it was some sort of procedure that was going to give me superpowers or something. But in reality, I just felt like I was becoming sort of Darth Vader. COVID and all these sort of technology sort of masks and sensors on my body and things.
You just walked away from that meeting and just looked at me in the lift. Like, Mum, what's happened? But you were in bed for weeks after that. And that was awful. Just don't get it.
I guess that's what I was thinking about, you know, what was the impact of that piece of exercise that you were forced to do on you afterwards? And you've just said that, you know, you had to do bed rest and you were in bed for quite a while.
Yeah. With increased symptoms and increased isolation and everything. Yeah. It was intense, all really just to get a piece of paper that meant that the school was able to reduce the attendance expectations, really, because they needed it from a specialist at that point.
Mm-hmm. So part of the diagnostic criteria for you to be able to get some extensions in your school was that you went somewhere where they could do exercise testing to prove that what you were telling them was actually accurate. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. They just sort of chucked me on a treadmill and stop when you have to. And I guess I'd try to go as far as I could, but I couldn't any longer after not very long at all, just because it was so exhausting.
And then after that, you had the Nasaline test performed on you.
Yes, yeah.
Occupations.
Sort of a combination of all those are just disastrous, I guess.
And I mean, I guess anyone understands what it's like even just to share what you've gone through with a specialist. It takes enough cognitive power and energy, let alone the physical side of things as well. It was intense. So we quickly eliminated that from our bucket.
So that was part of the diagnostic criteria that your school required.
Not the actual physical part of component, but they did require a specialist letter. And at that point, quite early on in the piece, we had no idea where to go, except that happened to be somewhere that was recommended to us as being and it's a major Sydney Children's Hospital, be the place to go to.
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of barriers, would you regard that as being, you know, a major barrier that you encountered? And then when you add stigma to that, are they issues that you believe systemically we need to address? And it sounds as though they need to be addressed not just within the healthcare system, but within the education system as well.
Yeah, very much so. It just really needs to be as accessible as possible. Otherwise, I just used to dread going in a waiting room and the toll that took alone before I even got to see a doctor. And
it's staggering, yeah, even the lack of education in the medical system itself.
Yeah.
When the impact of radios on loud or bright fluorescent lights or whatever it might be.
That stimulation. Yeah.
Absolutely. And long wait times for people with chronic illness too. It really needs, I think it needs a broader education. I'm embarrassed by how little I knew before we both got ill with this. And I consider myself someone who's reads pretty broadly, and yet I knew very little.
So, Jen, it sounds as though you had long COVID as well. Is that right?
That's right. So I was infected with COVID before Henry and came down with the symptoms before he did. And the first times that we started to wonder whether there was something going on was he was complaining of very sore legs. And in the mornings, he found it hard to get out of bed and would literally be holding onto the walls as he walked down the hallway to stand up. But I don't have POTS anywhere near as chronically as Henry. It's a borderline. Whereas for Henry, that's probably his most significant condition, although there's a whole host of them.
What are some of the interventions, Henry, that have helped you with your orthostatic intolerance?
Yeah, as in sort of medicine and, well, how so?
Yeah, medicine.
Yeah.
What else do you do to help your POTS?
Yeah.
Or long COVID generally?
I suppose lifestyle is the biggest one, just in that I have to have it geared towards things that I can do and to really not push myself at all. Otherwise, that, yeah, as I said, it can be disastrous. But
you really pace out your school.
Yeah.
School's been fantastic and very accommodating and aware.
Yep.
But being able to have lessons recorded so he doesn't have to be there in real time has made a huge difference.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Really helpful. He would be able to not complete the HSC in 1 year, but he's chosen he just wants to get it done, which I give him a lot of kudos for and could completely understand why. But he's really smart. And I think some of the advice from the eMERGE nurse that you actually spoke with a fortnight ago has been really helpful in that, because one of the questions we asked her was, what advice would you give to someone who's at school in how to manage their time and sort of looking at things from a week perspective all the time? But you're very good with managing your medications, and you know that you have to have them at certain times when that alarm goes. Otherwise, things pretty fast.
I'm very reliant on pretty much all of them.
Yeah. But you're good at resting. You're good at keeping your feet elevated. You're conscious of all of those things, drinking lots of water. It took us a long time to find ways to get electrolytes into him. Not those things. And anything that doesn't taste so good. But yeah, I think they've been the main things. I mean, they're staying out of the sun, but also trying to get some sun.
Daylight. Yeah.
Yeah. Those types of.
Yeah.
I love your comment, Henry, on focusing on those things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really important comment, whether it's people with long COVID, ME/CFS, young people, older people, because these conditions take so much out of you that it's easy to only focus on those things you can no longer do. And in order to maintain a really positive mindset, starting to focus on those things that you can do is a really positive mindset. So, you know, for someone so young, congratulations on having that mindset,
because
it certainly will stand you in good stead as far as, you know, going forward. And just, you know, being able to focus on some of those things that don't drag you down, because I can imagine that the limitations of what you can do every day could be something that could make you feel really upset.
Yeah.
You're really intentional finding things that you can do, aren't you? Like, you're fortunate to have grandparents who live close by who are desperate to help you find ways to relax and find things that interest you. So whether that be for a while there, he was just whittling wood just in his hands, carving little shapes, and you've done all sorts of, whether it's your Lego.
Hobbies,
I've done a lot of hobbies, taught himself how to play the guitar, which has brought him a lot of joy.
Amazing.
Lots of things like that. So he really has owned this, owned the challenges, but found ways to keep his brain interested in the world around him, which I give him complete credit for, because he's
been most of a kid. That's a recipe for, you know, people who are listening to this who you know, might have young people who've got long COVID who are in your age group, you know, of what to do to try to help yourself, because it can be a very disempowering position to be in when you've got long COVID, ME/CFS, et cetera. And, you know, I just congratulate you on being so positive and trying new things to try to make yourself feel better, because I'm sure it helps.
It does help. I think it's easy for people to hear that. It could be easy for people to hear that and think, oh, he's sounding so good. But he's also missed out on all the things that he loved doing before this. So whether that be climbing trees or serious mountain bike riding and hiking up. I think it was just beforehand. He has lost a lot, but I think he's been able to reframe things and still hoping that there'll be a way that he'll be able to have those things accessible to him. Mm. Maybe not climbing trees in one form or another.
So can I turn for a moment to the issue of stigma?
Mm.
Can you talk a little bit about how that's affected you, Henry?
Yeah, I think definitely sort of people's presumptions can really, really have an impact on you in more ways than one. And whether or not the presumptions are sort of silly or kind-hearted, it still can be quite sort of damaging, just in that, you know, that's not what it's like and that people don't really understand. And yeah, there definitely is a stigma towards sort of long COVID and the kind of person that you are, I think, particularly in those sort of early days, and even sometimes now, there's definitely a stigma of that I'm sort of just antisocial. But really, I'm quite desperate to be social, but I can't, and I have to sort of remove myself from some sort of conversations and things like that, just because it can be that intense.
Henry was always our very outgoing social boy who was always on the go and always interacting with people and making people smile and laugh and or having good conversations with people. So that's been really heartbreaking to watch. And in some ways, long COVID has impacted his personality. I think it's made him a little bit darker with his humour. But to see what people presume or expect him to be able to do or not realise just the what cost it's come to him to do X, Y, Z is kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And in some ways it's hard, like no one can understand unless they've got it themselves, but there is definitely a lot of stigma around it.
Yeah.
It must be very difficult for you, Jen, as the mum, you know, to see yourself in that situation.
Yeah, it is really hard. To be honest, I don't focus on it because I think if you focus too much on it, you would actually go in a downhill spiral. And I'm very fortunate that Henry has the personality type that he does, that he's actually a joy to be around. But it's, I think we just take a day at a time.
Yeah.
But I know he's going to be okay because of his mindset. And I guess he's got a good ability to be able to forgive people, which I think actually does help him.
Absolutely.
So to be able to move forward, because I think if he held on to all the awful experiences he's had, whether that be at school, whether that be other people, or whether that be in the medical system, he'd be a write-off. But he's chosen not to go down that path, which I think is healthier for him.
Yeah, I just think that having the strength and the capacity to let go and not hold on to some of those things is absolutely a blessing. I just want to ask you about the impact, Henry, that you feel your disease and also Jen has had on the rest of your family. What kind of family impact has there been?
We're both pausing because it's been significant.
Yeah.
Massively so, whether it be just in the day-to-day living, whether it's to do with maintenance of the house and what my husband now has to do, and whether it's holidays and the things that we've always been a very outgoing, adventurous family, and certainly our holidays are now very different to that. The older two are at an age where they're both young adults, and I guess the 4 years has actually been a long time in their lives where they've gone from being teenagers to adults with their own independent lives. And so that's really hard to see that we haven't been as involved in activities with them as what we would like to be, or as available emotionally too. That's probably the hardest thing that I find. But yeah, and they've been terrifically supportive, and certainly they don't complain at times when they actually have a right to probably complain, not towards us, but at the world and at COVID. But yeah, it's been massively impactful.
Yeah, thank you for that. So, Henry, what are some of the key messages or lessons from your experiences that you'd like to share with the Minister for Health?
Yeah.
Long COVID, about ME/CFS, energy limiting conditions, and its impact particularly on young people and their needs.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's kind of impossible in that the long COVID is impossible to manage and to understand. It's so challenging, and people don't understand or often don't put in the effort to understand what that can be like and how that completely changes your life for predominantly the worse.
And you really feel for those kids who haven't had the same opportunities to access the medication that Henry's had, which has come at, you know, we as a family, we've been fortunate to be able to pay for, and we've had some support from family members to be able to access the best of the medications that will be allowed to be prescribed to him at his age, but and access specialist care. So to see those sort of medications to be more affordable, but certainly being able to access more communities to meet other people, to make sure that kids aren't socially isolated, we've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
So I've interrupted you there, but I know what you've been thinking about in the past.
Yeah.
So finally, my final question is, do you have any messages for others living with long COVID that you believe will bring them some hope and encouragement?
Yeah. It's a slow process, but you really can, at least at the very least, try and make good of what you do still have. And while you might not even be able to make good, I think trying is really, really important, not only on your mental health, but I think that does sort of affect your physical, that you've really got to persist through it. And it's really worth persisting.
And being kind to yourself.
Yes.
I think has been something that you've had to learn too, is that I've done my best, that's all I can do, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I just want to deal with it. Yeah.
Thank you, Henry, for your openness, your honesty, and for sharing your story. I know that there'll be many young people out there with long COVID or ME/CFS, because long COVID morphs into ME/CFS after a particular time, who will have received great comfort from your story. And it's provided a lot of very helpful information as well in terms of navigating health systems and navigating education systems as well. So thank you, Henry, and thank you, Jen. So today's podcast is part of a clinical series that Emerge Australia is recording with people of influence, brought to you on Long COVID Awareness Week. It's a platform where we can together explore the pressing issues faced by 250,000 people with ME/CFS and at least another 400,000 with long COVID in Australia. Tune in again for our next interview. And don't forget, for more information and to subscribe to the Emerge Australia newsletter, visit our website on www.org.au. Thank you again, Henry and Jen, and bye for now.
You may say that I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.